Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Thank you so much for this very automated welcome. I think this might fit very well with this session because we're going to talk a lot about being more human. We're going to talk a lot about fear and being bold, and even just seeing six people here who were bold enough to sit on the front couch. Amazing.
Yeah.
All round of applause for the six people who were not afraid of John and I. Shame for you guys sitting over there. The shittiest rooms in the house anyways. My name is Thomas. I've been drumming the purpose drum for about two decades now, before anybody actually gave a fuck about purpose. I don't know how you feel about purpose. I can promise you one thing today. We're not going to talk about artificial intelligence. Sorry. First session, not about artificial intelligence. What we're going to talk about is and uncover is obviously what's the state of purpose. I think purpose is a bit like Pokemon. Everybody's searching for it. Nobody knows why. I wrote my first book about purpose about a decade ago, was a big believer. Today, what the fuck is happening in our world of advertising? I think most of the shit we're seeing from brands today that claims to be purposeful, is it really? So I had to write a second book, which John was very, very kind to donate a few
words. He's plugging his book now. So
I am. This is the sales 10 seconds commercial now. We'll talk oat milk very soon, from folks to oat milk. But the reason why I wrote it was basically that I felt with all these brands talking about purpose, what brand have in fact created change in your life? And I think that's a really good test in terms of authenticity. So maybe ask yourself, what brand have actually created change in your life? And I think Oatly is one of those brands who's actually done something interesting. And I think why this session is probably the most important session at Advertising Week, bold claim, is because it's about how we build better brands. I think at the moment, I don't know, we're too obsessed with the technique, the processes, all these things, and we forget what really matters. You know, being fearless, embracing creativity. These are the long, you know, long-lasting disciplines in the world of advertising. We're going to unpack a lot of stuff here with John, which I'm looking forward to. So you probably don't need much of an introduction. John is, I guess, global CMO of Oatly.
Not CMO. I don't believe in CMOs.
See.
I run a creative department called the Oatly Department of Mind Control. But we'll get into that later. I just think that marketing departments are approvers, and I would rather have makers, but so I'm not CMO. No. Sorry.
So extremely difficult to navigate these days of branding and advertising. Just to kick this off, how many of you work for at an agency or in a brand, for a brand that you feel has a burning purpose? So hands up. Quite a few of you. Okay, somebody's shaking their head over there. That's fine. Okay, how many of you are scared shitless of the task working advertising and marketing right now? Anyone who's scared shitless? No? You should be. Anybody who's fucking fearless? It's one guy, two, three, four people. Okay, that's good. We're going to get back into that and how that really matters in this session. But anyways, all of you know Oatly, but I really want to begin with this sort of early days of Oatly because I think it really speaks truth to how, back to the Pokemon quote, how do you build a brand with purpose? How do you get that right?
Yeah, well, that's a pretty big question. Thomas, I can start by giving you guys a little bit of breakdown of how Oatly started. It started back in the 90s, long before I even knew it existed. It's like, you know, based on science, the same researchers that found lactose intolerance in humans also figured, let's make a milk that's better for human consumption than cow's milk. Because we all know that cow's milk's basically for baby cows. At least 99 of 100 biologists will tell you that. You can pay off the other one. So Tony, my friend, he's my friend, got this job at an oat milk company. The board who hired him were crazy. He had no experience whatsoever from the food industry. And so they hired him. And Tony calls me up and says, John, I'm the CEO of an oat milk company. Can we do something? And I thought, he said goat milk company, which was just as disgusting as oat milk for me. So I said, I don't know, Tony, I'm super happy for you and your new, you know, career as a CEO. It sounds exciting. But he was super persistent. And so if I give you the shortest storyline ever, we basically found a way to explain what oat milk was to people with this line, it's like milk, but made for humans. If you live in London, I'm sure you've seen it.
How many of you recognize this line? Come on, some hands up here.
Yeah. And we also had this little wonderful drawing that just showed you that you don't need to take the oats and go through the pre-processing plant of a cow to make a milk. You just take the oats and make a milk. So that was cool. And we put that out into the world. And the evil Swedish dairy lobby sued us because they're bullies. I thought it was really funny. 174-page lawsuit comes down on the table. And I just laughed because I thought, like, lawyers spent like an entire summer reading the 13,000 word website I'd written. That's great. Now they know something about oat milk.
And I think that's actually a really good point we spoke about, because facing that resistance make you even stronger as a brand in some ways, right?
Yeah. So the thing is you never know. We had this, just to give you guys, this was the only strategic document we had at the time. And it's,
please take an image of it. This is going to show that
to your partner. It's pretty simple. It's like most of us working in advertising, we're like, you know, our companies are half good and half bad, somewhere in between. And we're mostly like in fear of what do our bosses think? What do the client think? And our whole thing was like, you know, like we need to be as good as company as possible, as transparent and honest as possible. And we need to be fucking fearless. So when we got sued, that was the first time that we were really put to a test. And this is what they sued us for. That line, because they said it made milk seem old-fashioned. Uh-huh. And this one, because they said milk technically doesn't come out of the ass of a cow. So really cool.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to how you actually build a brand, right? This idea about not being afraid of the haters and actually doing things right. But I think one of the things that I absolutely love Oatly for, I have a background as a copywriter, and obviously there's a lot of copy-led ads in there, but also just the whole look of Oatly, I think, is quite unique. If you think about it, there's so little time in retail. And so how did that come about? How did you sort of, you had an idea about the brand and the guts and the fearlessness, but how do you actually express that in the other day?
So again, if we backtrack a little bit, if you think about it, Tony's calling me up saying he's the CEO of an oat milk company. And I asked him to send me the packaging. What does it look like? And this is what he sent me. Probably the worst packaging in food history. Pours from the right. And if you look at the chocolate, it's like a mushy hand there, and then the chocolate bits fall off. I think that was a huge problem. Again, I didn't have any reason to really want to do it. And when you looked at it on shelf, I mean, there's Oatly products all over there. You just can't find them. So I think like that is the basic, most humble beginnings. We just thought this has to feel real. It has to feel like hand-drawn. You know, so everything on an Oatly carton is drawn for hand. You can see all this stuff, but it's all drawn for hand. And then it was just like the only marketing budget we really had in the beginning was the side of our packaging. So the plan was to get it to stick out. You can see an Oatly carton from a long way away. It says Oat and then Lee. which you should never probably hyphen the name of your company. And then we used the side of packaging to tell our story, actually. And again, we'll get a little bit into purpose in a second, but it's just like our feeling on this was that we wanted to be a company and not a human and not a logo. You know, so it's human purpose. It's my own view on advertising, capitalism, life, society, and what companies should do. Tony's as well. And that's what came out on the first side of packaging, like a really honest human approach to things. And I think that, you know, took off immediately. And that was the voice, actually, that and it was just like, here's what we believe. And it the original version of that carton said, you know, like the reckless pursuit of profit should be punishable, should be a crime. And it's like, that's a very, very, very leftist approach, but it's also was a healthy approach that companies have a responsibility to society, to the society that they build.
And I think this also brings us back to this conversation about humans, because why aren't we seeing all this in the world of advertising and marketing? And you guys are just structured differently in so many ways. You started out with quite a provocative statement saying, you know, I kind of hate CMOs a little bit, you know? And so how do you make sure that you have a department, colleagues, who go to work fearless, human, which, you know, should be easy to go to work and be human, but how do you make sure that stays true?
I think the most important thing is, I don't know, I'm always running up against things and trying to fight the system. So when your friend becomes the CEO, you have a golden ticket to prove everything. And so, Thomas, for me, the thing was, can I prove, you know, like, I didn't think that you needed approvers. I thought marketing departments were terrible buyers of ideas because they were scared of trying to make boss man happy. And so I very selfishly said to Tony, it was on a phone call like this. Tony was probably asleep. But he said, yes. I said, so I'll do this job if we remove the marketing department entirely and we just have a creative department. Remember, this isn't an in-house agency with a creative department and a market. There's no marketing people in the company at all. And what happens is that when you let the creatives become part of business, there's no briefs. We're already briefed. It's like the lasagna company coming in, read the brief. Now it's snow tire manufacturer. It's like we're all briefed and we're all working all the time. And so I think that's the key. And I would think that that results in the creative departments. We brief ourselves, if we can call it a brief. We approve.
There's just one woe there from one creative somewhere.
But we approve the work also. Like and no one except the CEO, who technically has a legal responsibility, can stop any of our campaigns. So look at the trust that you build automatically. We're integrated. I sit in all the supply meetings, finance meetings. So when you do that, you create like a lot of trust in the company and you spend a lot of time listening to different things. So, I mean, yeah, we made these like incredible outdoor stuff. I mean, London, I think, is our home. If you remember back, we walked around Shoreditch at the time, which we figured, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago was the center of the universe. And we just pointed on certain walls that we wanted. And then because we don't believe in ROIs or USPs or any of those other acronyms, we just thought we would just want people to be interested in oat milk and then they can try it for themselves. So it was a very simple formula. This particular one was like, the artists are going to hate you for this forever because, and none of them did. So, and again, what happens is you make great work, but my only thing that I would say is I think the most important part of the creative department is that we're embedded in the business. And if there's anything wrong with an agency client relationship today, it's that the agency is not invited to do any of the important work. They get to make content. And then there's a lot of other cooler people than an agency making content in the world. We all know how that goes. So the real thing is that we're like deciding, how do we launch this? Looking at different business solves. And I think creative people are extremely good at that if they're invited in.
So I think one of the really interesting things about this as well is that you have creativity at the very heart of the company, where does purpose fit in to all of this? What is it that you wanted from people in the very beginning? Because you talk a lot about things like degrowth, things that a lot of brands don't dare to talk about. You dare to also play a role in people's lives. I think, you know, we're faced with quite a big challenge, to be honest, in terms of sustainability and climate. And one of the ways we can obviously do something good is to eat differently, drink differently. And I can say that as a Dane. I think, weird enough, we as Danes are being advertised as some of the most sustainable in the world, which is bullshit. The average carbon footprint of a Dane is 13 tons, and we need to reach around 3 to 4 tons. So how do Oatly fit into this sort of journey of purpose and viewing and helping people?
Well, you said that this wasn't going to be a session on AI.
Yeah.
But ChatGPT takes 17 times more energy than a Google search. Figure that one out. Yeah. Yeah. Who's ever doing 100 ChatGPT searches? Wow, we're killing the planet like even faster. You don't even have to start a Bitcoin, you know, mine to start. So
I still kind of feel the killer robots are going to take us out for ruining their home, our planet, you know?
But I think that it's like the purpose thing, it has to come from like an individual. Like, you can't strategize a purpose. I give you an example. If you make a sugary soda water that has no nutritional value, but it makes people happy and it quenches their thirst, that is your purpose. It's okay. Yeah. You know, like, you make people happy and quench their thirst. You don't have to like try to construct something else, because you make a sugary soda water that's bad for people's health that has no nutritional value. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't matter how much strategy you do. So I'm super lucky. I work at a company that every single liter of oat milk that is sold instead of cow's milk reduces a carbon footprint by 49% to 82%, depending on the comparisons and market. It's like, it still has an impact. I think it still has an impact, but it's easy to get behind that, and it's easy to recruit people. Everyone who works at Oatly comes there for a reason. So, and that's a magical thing. You all know in your professional lives, like, how often do you get someplace where you really feel that you're doing something good? And so I think Tony and I, in the beginning, that's what we built. It was an experiment. We never talked about money, like return on investment. Don't bother me with that. I asked the board if it could be a nonprofit just to see what they would say. You know, there's just like a lot of things. And the purpose was, you know, a proof point for me personally, maybe, like, there's another way to do business, that we don't have to play into the capitalistic game, that I don't have to take directions from a CMO.
And then something happened, right? Then something happened, because you had a fun early days, full of creativity, very, very little marketing budget. And then, as some of you might have read in the news some years ago, obviously you became a publicly traded company. You got a lot of bigger budgets, I guess. But one thing I really liked was how you showed up. Because for a small Swedish oat milk brand to show up at the Super Bowl, for me, was like, wow, this is kind of like Apple beating at the big guys. And you showed up at Super Bowl. Why did you do that?
Yeah, it was a weird year. It was 2020, I think. 2020 going into 2021, we were all locked up in our houses. Yeah. There was a really good deal on Super Bowl ads. I had told Tony at one time, if we ever become big and famous, you know, we did this spot with Tony singing in a field. It was like, we did about 30 videos with Tony, because I figured if you meet Tony, you'll love Tony and then you'll love Oatly. Yeah. So we just made fun of him. Like, we wrote fake scripts. And then when we got on set, we just filmed him complaining about it. And then we asked him if he would sing a song, because I know he was like a musician before. And he said, I don't have time. I'm a CEO. So we wrote a song for him, and then we were impinging on his creative freedom. So we show up in an oat field, and we put an 80s keyboard there, and he sang the song that he composed himself, it was really nice and wonderful. And it's like milk made for humans. It's like milk made for humans. So it was perfect. It came out right when we got sued. So we just ran it at prime time. But the interesting thing was I told him, like, if we ever become big enough to run a Super Bowl spot, I'm going to put you on the Super Bowl, because I wanted everyone to think if you could sing or not. And the idea was, let's make the best or the worst Super Bowl of all time. It doesn't really matter. Both of them are good. And so we put Tony singing on the Super Bowl. And I'm American, but I never really understood the impact of a Super Bowl spot, because it plays to 200 million people or 100 million people or something, and it's crazy. And this was like the headline that we got the next day. And I think if you still look at rankings, they're still ranking this spot as one of the best ever, because it was one of the worst ever. I wanted to get Tony on Jimmy Kimmel, and I didn't succeed, but I got Jimmy Kimmel to comment on him that Tony spent $5 million to tell everyone he can't sing.
And I think this is the thing about failure, right? That embracing failure can lead to something that's actually greater, that you shouldn't be afraid of people not liking your ads or even hating it. And I think this is one of the things that you very early on embraced. I remember you in the early days of Oatly even had like a little number or an email people could actually write you if they wanted to.
I put my email and phone number on the packaging. It was a really stupid thing to do. But I was really naive, you know, again, because the purpose was there. I would get people calling me up telling me I was ruining the Swedish language by putting English on the packaging. I said, okay, yeah, well, I wouldn't choose the packaging of an oatmeal company to ruin the Swedish language. That's pretty bad media. That's it. And again, we love failure. Every time we were sued, it was a new brief. Every time we failed, it was a chance to do an ad that was better than the last one. We thought that people were going to hate the Super Bowl idea. So we made these t-shirts that said, with Tony, of course, that said, I hated that Super Bowl commercial. And the first 200 people that wanted them, we bike messengered them out, and I think it was Tampa where the Super Bowl was in New York. And the funny thing was, this Fox News here, they're always got the, it's like it sold out in 24 hours. It sold out in like 22 minutes. So yeah. I can't even get that right.
I totally hated that commercial. Right. But I think the way to embrace that failure and because I think, especially now with all the things and all the coming legislation around greenwashing, and it seems like everybody is scared. There's so much talk about greenwashing. So people just stay silent. The way that you responded to a crisis, I found really interesting. It was not just shutting up. You did the opposite. You said, if you don't fucking like us, we're okay with that. And we're even going to make a website for it, right?
Yeah, so we have a lot. We ended up in a lot of trouble. Our legal. We always joke that our lawyer is also in the creative department, because we're always getting sued, you know, and we're always doing what people think is wrong. But every single decision we made was made on the basis of what's right for society, or what's, you know, it wasn't necessarily the right things. And I mean, here we ended up suing a small bleep farms. We have Blackstone as an owner, the greatest company at capitalism there is in the world. It's like they're all good, but Blackstone's better, but that's bad for us. So there's a lot of things that went wrong. So we figured that we shouldn't hide behind those things. So we made this website called fuckoatly.com. I'm going to show you guys now.
See, that's a free piece of advice. You can take whatever brand you work for and just do fuckx.com. Free advice.
Free advice, but good luck.
It's year is 2014. The Swedish oat drink manufacturer Oatly is reaping global success with their new proactive design. Their youthful can-do attitude and revolutionary products are taking the world by storm. And oat drink is on everybody's lips. But soon enough, they will discover that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So what's the weakest link in this scenario, you ask? Why, Oatly themselves, of course. A series of bold decisions like giving their oat fiber residues their pigs, accepting money from global venture capitalists, and serving a small British family-owned oat drink business a lawsuit led to mass protests, boycotts, and general discontent in social media. What happened to the once glorious company and their ideals? The answer is to be found here at fuckoatly.com. And with that, I bid you farewell. And from now on, the title cards, accompanied by catchy music, will explain what we're dealing with.
Yes, well, and I'm calling about the fuck Oatly. Go fuck yourself. Oatly can go fuck yourself. It's disgusting. It's not milk. Get over yourself, you libtards.
It's wonderful.
Let's give the haters a round of applause, right?
It's wonderful to have an enemy when the enemy is the most political consumer product in the supermarket. I'm quite thankful for that, but it strikes people like how threatening can oat milk really be, but some people find it threatening. So, and we think that there's a reason for everything that we do. So, and again, that ties back to sustainability. It ties back to purpose. It ties back to everything.
And hate and love are powerful agents of change, in fact. And I think, because I really want to touch on the sustainability part of purpose as well. Because as I said, we're faced with quite a gargantuan challenge in the advertising industry, in terms of our footprint, in terms of everything we do. And I think there's a lot of brands who are just paying lip service to sustainability at the moment. And sustainability most of the time is super boring. It's kind of like a science professor, but somehow you always end up making it interesting. And secondly, which I absolutely love, you also help people because quite frankly, it's difficult to live more sustainably. And in this next challenge that I loved, you gave to the dairy industry, the ones who sued you in the very beginning, you said to them, if you show us your numbers, the footprint of a milk, we'll show you ours. So can you speak to how you manage that?
Yeah, I think sustainability is a weird thing.
Yeah.
It's an overused word, so it's dead. It's like plant-based. It starts to mean very little now. If you take the word itself, sustainability, the ability to sustain, it goes against human nature. You know, it's just like, it's a weird thing. So I think that that's one of the problems, that everyone thinks they need to be sustainable, and they do. And I can put up with greenwashing if there's to some extent, as long as it's pushing things forward, as long as people are aware of it, it's fine. We realized that transparency was super important. And you know, like the nutritional panels on the sides of food, it was legislated in the United States in 1994. So I don't know when it was here, probably around that time. And before that, we didn't really know what a carb was, you know, because or fat or sugar content. We didn't know any of that. And so we figured that it's the same thing with a carbon footprint. If people don't know the impact of what they're buying, how can they make the right choices? So putting your carbon footprint on each one of your products, you can see here, they're all different. And they're different in every single country. And they're based on life cycle analysis. It's a huge process. And then you have to reprint all your cartons. So we did this campaign. This is many years ago, actually. And we thought, okay, the world's going to change. And we challenged other companies to do so. And nothing really happened. I think Unilever actually started to mark 70,000 of their products. So total success. But the dairy industry, of course, did nothing. So a few years later, last year, we did this campaign. And it was both print and outdoor. And it was just like, we bought two billboards. We're going to give the other one to the dairy company. Mm-hmm. We'll buy them tons of advertising if they just tell you what their carbon footprint is. Not one dairy company took us up on the offer. They're too busy doing net zero, you know, like buying offset certificates in Africa for trees that take 30 years to mature and don't offset anything. So this was great. And the thing is that the timing was so different. The first time, nothing really happened. The second time, the British government came to us and asked us to consult them on putting carbon footprint legislation in place. So it's like, no. That for me is a much bigger success story than just the sales numbers of the month of April, personally.
And how did the industry respond?
I think we're going to see things changing. Here's the thing is, companies have a responsibility to create change. I really believe that. Governments do too. Right now, governments are a bit slow because politics are weird. And so it's a matter of, you know, pushing them and showing them that there's different ways. And when they come through and legislate, it'll be completely different. And then we can see the impact of milk. It's also like this campaign was a huge... There was an amendment 171. You know how the EU works. They it's really weird. They have like 400 million euros to stop all competition to cow's milk, but they also have these climate goals. And so there was a piece of legislation that wouldn't allow us to package our products in any package that milk had first. So we did this capture, like, can you tell the difference between, you know, click on the milk? Like, people can tell the difference. I think every company has a responsibility from a sustainability standpoint, but it's just the word sustainability has become more difficult to mean anything because it's just overused.
And I think that's a really good little way to wrap up this session. I think we've learned a lot. I think one of the key lessons is, in fact, that we need to be more fearless. I don't know how many of you feel a little bit more fearless now. More hands? Not really. You're still scared as shit. Not great. And I think we need that. I think, honestly, when I started advertising 20 years ago, it was fun. It was creative. We built amazing brands that really made a difference in people's lives. Right now, all we talk about is fucking systems and AI and all that stuff. If we don't embrace our role, if we don't dare to do bold stuff as Oatly, where are we going to end up? I mean, for sure, an AI might take your job because it might be way better at it. So embrace the fearlessness. I think another key lesson was creativity. How do you actually integrate creativity into the very heart of the department? Sack the marketing department, maybe, would be a good advice as well. And then lastly, let's embrace the hate. Let's not fear the failure, and now you've got a free piece of marketing advice. You can always do fuck whatever brand you work for.com, and you can show them all the stuff that's wrong about your brand. John, thank you so much for showing us the journey that Oatly has been on from the early days to today being a publicly traded company and all the difficulties it is to be a publicly traded company and the pushback that you're sometimes being faced with. And any little final piece of advice before we let these free-minded, hopefully fearless people wander and do some amazing stuff?
I would just say that failure is the most important thing to create success. And change is most oftentimes good. So even if AI comes, you have to realize that everyone else has the same AI that you do, and they're going to use it. It's this in the same way, and it's going to generate the same result because they're going to ask the same questions. It's the same thing with data. If everyone has the same data, I love it that everyone's there, because then you can be over there. It still needs people thinking and thinking differently and becoming human, or taking a human approach to what they're doing. And then having a responsibility for not only just sales or success of a brand, but also for the society that we live in, and the we have a world, you know, to live in the future. So
very good point. Let's just be proud of working in advertising. I feel we have a lack of great talent coming into our industry, and I think it's because we forget that we don't give them enough reason to work in this amazing industry. So let's hopefully give people better reasons to work in our industry. Best of luck on your change journey, and go fuck something up. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek, and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.